Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew is back and welcoming you to the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. Today's date is Saturday, November 8th, 2014, and this is your MSS host, Luis Jr., assisting with bringing to you yet another exciting, interesting, and exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, we are back, as I promised last week. The, October is over, and we are getting November kicked off with, those OTR surprises that you love best and that you keep coming back for every single week. So, without any further delays, I am going to introduce the presenter for tonight's program, and she just so happens to be Queen of Radio Out of the Past, Joy Jackson, or who I like to refer to as JJ Jackson. But anyway, enough of the ranting and rambling and babbling. Let's get things rolling. So if we could all just sit back, grab those drinks and snacks, and enjoy the program.
JJ, the microphone is yours.
Thanks, Louise. Welcome to the MSS edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. We have a couple of brand new treasures this evening, both of them scenes in everyday life in America, but they are hardly ordinary. How many of us have had to serve on a jury? Well, in the 1970s, I was tapped for that duty 3 times in 10 years, for a month at a time. All of them murder and forgery cases, mostly. I got so tired of the other ladies in the jury talking nonstop about their grandkids. Ugh. Sam Spade tells us of his time in the jury box, in the jury duty caper.
American Radio Theater presents a lost show from the days of old-time radio, including the original commercials. Produced by Joy Jackson and directed by Dave Leese, here's Ivan Curry as Sam Spade, Detective.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Detective, brought to you by Wild Root Cream Oil, the non-alcoholic hair tonic that contains lanolin. Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Jury duty, sweetheart. Through, do you hear?
Oh, Sam, is the trial finished?
Trial's been called off, sweetheart.
Something go wrong?
Nothing serious. DA merely discovered he was trying the wrong man for the wrong crime.
Thanks to juror Sam Spade, no doubt.
Well, who else? Who else? Stay where you are, sweetheart. I'll be right down with the lowdown on the jury duty caper.
Dashiell Hammett, America's leading detective fiction writer and creator of Sam Spade, The Hard-Boiled Private Eye, and William Spear, radio's outstanding producer-director of mystery and crime drama, join their talents to make your hair stand on end with the adventures of Sam Spade. Presented by the makers of Wild Root Cream Oil for Men.
Why is Wild Root Cream Oil such an outstanding favorite with so many well-groomed people? Because it's the outstanding different hair tonic. Among all the leading hair tonics, only Wild Root Cream Oil contains lanolin. Only Wild Root Cream Oil gives you that neat, handsome Wild Root look. So get the big economy-sized bottle of Wild Root Cream Oil at your drug or toilet goods counter. And ask your barber for Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
And now, Wild Root brings to the air the greatest private detective of them all in the adventures of Sam Spade.
Your pants!
Yeah, they're frozen. Bring your book, Effie.
The safest place in the world, a jury box. What happened? Did you fall out of it?
Dictation, Miss Perrine, when you have the time.
What kind of a jury were you serving on? Couldn't the judge keep order?
This one goes to the DA's office, Effie.
Oh, they called and said to forget it. What does that mean?
That's justice, Effie. No more than justice. To the DA's office from Samuel Spade, license number 137596. Gentlemen, I did not ask to serve under your jury. I was summoned. I went down to the hall, beefed to the court clerk, insisted that I was prejudiced against the defendant. I even told about my 100-proof bottle. Still, I became Samuel Spade, juror number 11, and was assigned to criminal court part 2. I found my way in the jury box along with the other 11 good men and true.
May it please your honor, Mr. Foreman and gentlemen of the jury, the defendant, Clarence Rocky Morrison, has been indicted by the San Francisco County Grand Jury of murder in the first degree in charge of having killed and murdered Albert Fogarty with premeditation and deliberation with malice aforethought.
Well, the prosecutor went on like that for an hour or so. It seemed the defendant, Rocky Morrison, had thrown a couple of slugs into Albert Fogarty in a fit of temper. Fogarty had been a contractor with a few side interests, ranging from sand and gravel to control of the policy market. Rocky Morrison was a small-time gunsel employed by Big Louis Havoc, an ex-Chicago boy, who owned a controlling interest in more of the local businesses that didn't pay taxes. After the indictment was read, the state called its first witness. I took one look at her and decided jury duty could be interesting.
Do you swear to tell the truth, so help you God?
I surely try.
Take the stand.
Thank you, I'm sure. Excuse me, just got out of the hospital. Pneumonia, double. Sorry, I'm sure.
Your name?
Doris DeSoto.
Is that your real name or an alias?
A what?
An assumed name.
Oh, an alias. That's my stage name.
You're an actress by profession?
I'll thank you to keep your insinuendos to yourself.
Oh, the prosecutor means that's what you do for a living, Miss DeSoto.
Oh, well, why didn't he say so? I'm a receptionist. At least I was. I just got out of the hospital and...
Yes, you mentioned that. You say you are a receptionist. By whom are you employed?
Blue Bottle Bar and Grill, Columbus Avenue. I was the third receptionist from the right as you go in, and I would have been promoted to the first if I hadn't been in the hospital. I had pneumonia, double. Sometimes I get these shooting pains, you know, and right about here, and they run all the way down to my vaccination scar, and, you know, you can see how much weight I lost, you know.
The witness will please remember that she is here to give testimony and is not an exhibit.
I'm sorry, I'm sure.
You were acquainted with the defendant, Clarence Rocky Morrison?
Rocky? Sure. He used to come into the Blue Bottle all the time. You know, to collect in that, you know?
To collect what?
Your Honor.
Yes, Mr. Snyder.
And that was when I first noticed, the first time, the defense attorney was Marty Snyder, Big Louis' mouthpiece, one of the smartest criminal lawyers in the country. He walks up to the judge's bench, took up a space facing the jury, and gave the spectators a good view of his profile before he spoke.
Your Honor, as counsel for the defense, I object to the prosecutor's line of questioning as incompetent, irrelevant, and immaterial.
Objection sustained. You will proceed with more caution, Mr. Prosecutor.
Your Honor, it was my hope to obtain testimony from the witness linking the defendant to certain rackets or financial operations, and thus to prove the motive behind the murder of Albert Fogarty.
That's a lie. He's trying to black my client's character.
You may continue with your questioning, Mr. Prosecutor. Sit down, Mr. Snyder.
I have only one more question to ask Miss DeSoto. What happened in the Blue Bottle Bar and Grill on the night of February the 2nd?
Well, I was drinking a hot rum toddy at the end of the bar, and Mr. Fogarty came in and asked for Gladys.
That is right. Gladys Ray?
Yes, that's her stage name, Gladys Ray. So Gladys went into a booth and ordered some drinks and like that, and then Rocky came in, straight out of a weed patch somewhere, honestly, and he said something in a real low voice to Mr. Fogarty, and they all went into the office, the three of them, and then there were shots and that, and Gladys screamed and came running out and said that Rocky had killed Mr. Fogarty.
Objection! Here's the evidence!
Your witness, Mr. Snyder.
No cross.
If Your Honor pleases, I would like to call my next witness, Miss Gladys Ray.
Gladys Ray to the stand. State's witness, Gladys Ray, to the stand, please.
Your Honor.
Yes?
The witness, Gladys Ray, has disappeared. Under the circumstances, the prosecution is forced to ask for a postponement of the trial until this key witness, the only witness to the crime, can be located.
Postponement denied. The trial will proceed.
It proceeded. It might proceed until next Christmas. This was an appalling prospect. At 9 p.m., I was locked into a room with juror number 3, a gentle little man called R. Crosley Hooper. Mr. R. Crosley Hooper came equipped to battle every germ that science had ever discovered.
Oh, yes, Mr. Spade. One can't be too careful. You should use this spray on your throat.
No, thanks. I'll just gargle with bourbon. What's that oilskin sack?
This? My sleeping bag. Always use it when I travel. The sheets in hotels, you know. See? Climb in like this.
But doesn't that that crackling keep you awake?
You get used to it. Besides, I take a sleeping pill. Here, have one.
Mr. Hooper put a sleeping pill in his glass of water. I took 2 pills. And I dropped them into a glass of water. Mr. Hooper's. 10 minutes later, R. Crosley Hooper was in what is coyly known as the Land of Nod. 15 minutes later, I was tiptoeing cautiously down the fire escape. Just as I arrived on the fourth floor landing, a window flew up. And a nylon-encased leg emerged therefrom. I recognized the vaccination scar. It was Doris DeSoto, the state's prize exhibit of the day. Going out for a breath of air, Mr. Soto?
Eek! Hey, who are you?
I'm on the jury, $3 a day. What are they paying you?
Listen, you won't tell on me, will you?
We'll make a deal. You won't tell on me, I won't tell on you.
Say, that's right. You're illegal, too. Listen, maybe you can help.
Maybe I can. It's like this. I don't like serving on a jury. Pay is poor, seats are very hard, and my business will come to a bad end unless I can find that missing witness and get this trial over with.
All right, come on. First we'll call on Eloise.
We lowered ourselves down into the alley back of the hotel by a painter's scaffold, which was suspended from the roof in the rear of the building. 25 minutes later, we were climbing Russian Hill, and I chimed the half hour by pushing a doorknob.
Good evening.
Ah, hello, Eloise. How's tricks?
Hello, Eloise.
If you're from the police, I'd like to see your warrant.
Well, I'm not from the police, so I don't need any. But if you're smart, you'll talk. Hiding out a state's witness in a murder trial is a serious offense.
Who are you?
My name is Spade. I'm a private detective.
Who planted you in that jury? Marty Snyder?
Maybe.
Well, you can tell Marty from me that I'm not hiding Gladys here, and I wish he'd stop sending people around here to snoop. Now get out of here, both of you.
Listen, Eloise, you've got to help me.
Please go, or I shall call the police and have you both arrested. Good night.
Now you've spoiled everything. I have to go back and be locked up with that other witness and that.
Not if you're smart.
What do you mean?
Gladys Ray?
I wish you wouldn't say that name out loud. It makes me nervous. Big Louie Havoc found out that you were asking for her.
I'll handle Big Louie. Where do we go next?
Gee, you're not scared of anything, are you? What's your given name?
Sam.
Well, Sam, there's Ruthie's down lower on Leavenworth. You might try there.
Leave us, not delay. On to Ruthie's.
Hello, you. Hon? Doris? Where'd you come from? I thought you were down in the blue bottle.
I've been sick. This is Sam Spade.
Well, come right in. Now, you just tell Ruthie all about it, dearie.
Well, I was in the hospital, double pneumonia, and I shouldn't ought to be out now. I got these shooting pains, you know.
Oh, drink this, dear. It'll help you. Pardon me. Say when, Mr. Spade?
Just to the top of the glass.
Do you two meet in a hospital?
No, he's in the jury, and I'm a witness. Isn't that the limit? And we're both A-W-O-L.
Now, isn't that cunning?
And we're looking for Gladys. On account of the trial, we're going forever. Ruthie, we've just got to find her.
Get out.
Ruthie, did we say something wrong?
Get out. You're trying to ruin me. Who sent you here, Big Louie?
I told Marty Snyder she wasn't here and I was leveling.
You come here like this, you'll get me knocked off. Now get out.
The rest of the way was all downhill. Down Leavenworth to Turk Street, cross Turk to Mason, and back to Columbus. Finally, we got somewhere in the neighborhood of North Point.
It was right along here somewhere. I know it was.
Well, what's the street number?
Would you mind stopping just a minute? I got that shooting pain again. I shouldn't ought to have come out like this.
We'll catch a taxi back to the hall. Here, lean on me.
This is the place, right here with the brick front.
You sure you will feel well enough to go on?
Sure, I'm okay. What's that?
It's okay, it's a truck back front.
What do you want?
We're looking for Gladys Ray.
You the law?
This young lady is her sister. She just came into town. She wants to find Gladys.
What's the matter with her? She sick?
I've been in hospital. Double pneumonia. I get these pains. Listen, we walked a long way. If Gladys is here, please don't tell us any lies.
Up the stairs. Big Louie Havoc's office. First door to your left.
You mean she's here?
Sure. Go on up. She's expecting you. The door is unlocked.
Thanks. Can I have my wallet back now?
What's that?
It's in your apron pocket there.
Now, how did it get there? $5. Take it.
Thanks. Come on, Doris. Can you make it?
I'm okay.
That's just what I was thinking. Come here.
Gee, you're nice.
Come on. The shabby, rickety-looking door swung open, and we walked into another world. Streamlined office furniture, indirect lighting, no windows, but you could smell the air conditioning. Door clicked shut behind us, and I wheeled around. The shabby wooden door that opened off the hallways was backed with a layer of steel armor plate and covered in green baize. There was no knob or lock on the inside of Big Louie's office, and you couldn't have slipped a razor blade into the crack around it. No baseboards, no openings, just a couple of air conditioning vents about the size of my head. Then Doris leaned on me.
Oh, Sam.
Take it easy, sweetheart. You're okay, remember?
Sam, would you kiss me again?
Sure.
Don't let go. Hold on to me.
Hey.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything. I was afraid you'd take me back to the hospital. I was so sure we'd find Gladys here. Is it very bad, Sam?
I don't know, sweetheart. It's small caliber.
Oh, it is bad. It is bad.
She held on for a split second, her nails digging into my coat sleeve, and then all at once she went as limp as a rag doll there on my arms. I carried her over to the couch and made sure of what I already knew. Poor little Doris DeSoto was a very dead doll. I looked at my hand, and there was blood on it. I reached in my overcoat pocket for a handkerchief, and my hand closed on cold metal. It was a beautiful little 25 caliber automatic known in the trade as a belly gun, light enough to be planted in my overcoat pocket by the landlady while she was lifting my wallet, but powerful enough to kill. I found a bottle of bourbon in the desk drawer and poured myself a slug of it. An hour later, the bottle was empty, but I was still no nearer to the answer. All I knew for sure was that because a man named Big Louie Havoc did, or did not want, a man named Rocky Morrison to take the rap for the murder of a man named Albert Fogarty, and a girl named Gladys Ray did or did not want to testify, Doris DeSoto was dead, and I was framed with a murder weapon.
The makers of Wild Root Cream Oil are presenting the weekly Sunday adventure of Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, Sam Spade.
Now, here's important news on good grooming. Better than 4 out of 5 users prefer Wild Root Cream Oil to all other hair tonics. Here is news and even more conclusive evidence that Wild Root Cream Oil is, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first. So if you want the well-groomed look that helps you get ahead, socially and on the job, listen. Recently, thousands of people from coast to coast who bought Wild Root Cream Oil for the first time were asked, how does Wild Root Cream Oil compare with the hair tonic you previously used? The results were amazing. Better than 4 out of 5 said they preferred Wild Root Cream Oil. And no wonder. It gives you the advantage that men consider most important. Wild Root Cream Oil grooms your hair neatly and naturally, relieves annoying dryness, and removes loose, ugly dandruff. What's more, non-alcoholic Wild Root Cream Oil is the only leading hair tonic that contains lanolin. That's like the oil of your skin. So ask for Wild Root Cream Oil, again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
And now, back to jury duty. Tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
The more I thought about it, the madder I got. I don't like any murder, but a stupid murder makes me boil. And nobody who knew Doris DeSoto well enough to kill her would have anything but a stupid reason for doing it. I put my overcoat over her body and went back to casing Big Louis Havoc's office-type trap. Nothing there but a desk calendar. The month showing on the calendar was January 1943. This was Big Louie's hideout. There'd be some simple way to unlock the door from the inside. And of course there was. I ran my hand along the under edge of the desk. There was a button there. Now I pushed it. Naturally, the door swung open.
Who's that? What are you doing up here?
I want some answers, and I want them fast. I haven't got much time.
I stand mute. I know
who told you to slip this gun in my pocket? Where's Big Louis Havoc?
Don't you yell at me.
You old hag, I ought to cut your fingers off at the knees. Secret rooms, gangsters' hideouts, a girl murdered on your doorstep. Where's your phone? I'm calling the cops.
It's out of order. And besides, we don't have
a phone. Where is it?
Okay, son, you got me bluffed. Can I trust you to keep me out of it?
Where's Big Louis?
I ain't seen him since 43. Snyder says he's on ice somewhere.
So why did you tell me Gladys Ray was up there?
Well, ain't she?
No, she ain't. Now tell me where she is, or I will tear your wig off.
Don't you contradict me, young man. I said she's up there, and I mean it. I seen her. She come in with Snyder. He says he wants to keep her on ice for a while. I ain't moved away from the lace curtain since. Lesson she disappeared into the woodwork, she's in that room.
Now listen, Granny.
Now, before you go flying off the handle again, go back and take another look.
So I did. I ripped up the carpet a strip at a time. Nothing there. But under the desk, I did find something. A switch box sunk in the concrete. Okay, I pried it open and looked inside. It was an ordinary type electric switch, and it said on it, in English, on and off. It was on, so I turned it off. I waited for something to happen. Nothing did except the kind of deathly quiet still settle over the room. I looked up the air conditioning vent. A little ribbon of crepe paper on the grill was still fluttering the breeze. Took another look at the switch. Just under the on-off part of it, there was a knob with some numbers around it. I blew some of the dust off. It was a thermostatic control, and the numbers were figured in degrees below freezing. I remember what the old lady had said about Marty Snyder wanting to keep Gladys on ice for a while, and a rather horrible thought crossed my mind. And then, Then I hear thumping on the other side of the wall. I edged along it, my ear flush with the concrete.
Help! Help! Let me out of here!
Where are you? Can you hear me?
Help me! I'll freeze to death!
How do I get through the wall?
The lights! The lights!
Which lights? They're all the way around the room!
The lights! Right over your head!
Well, I looked up. The lights were concealed behind a molding that ran near the ceiling. I stood up on a chair to get a better look. I lost my balance and grabbed at the molding to steady myself. Instead of steadying me, it carried me with it all the way to the floor. A whole 4-foot section of concrete wall disappeared into the floor, and a blast of refrigerated air roared out at me. The cold room was half the size of Big Louie Havoc's office, and stashed inside it was the reason for Big Louie's elaborate icebox. Enough nitroglycerin and detonating caps to crack every safe in the city. And huddled up against a pile of crates was a very cold blonde. Her face and hands were blue and her teeth were chattering, but she still seemed afraid to come out.
Who are you?
Come on, never mind that now. We'll talk when you get you thawed out.
But wait, we can't just leave him there.
Here, put this coat around you. Leave who in there?
It's so terrible I can't even talk about it. Go and look for yourself behind that bunch of boxes.
I went and looked. I thought at first it was a great wax dummy, but it wasn't. It was Big Louie Havoc. If he had been in there 4 days or 4 years, he wouldn't have looked any different, but from what I hadn't heard of him in the past 4 years, I settled for that. I left him there. Gladys was beginning to show signs of life. She'd found a bottle of whiskey in the desk drawer and held it steady enough to get a drink out of it. Here, come on, let me help you. You'll break those beautiful white teeth.
Thanks. Hey, who's that over there on the couch? Looks like Doris.
Yeah.
She asleep?
Yeah, let her alone. She's had a hard day.
Didn't she testify at the trial?
Oh, yeah, she testified.
What's she doing out?
She was worried about you, Gladys.
I just couldn't get up there and testify against Rocky Morrison. He didn't kill Fogarty. It was Marty Snyder. Marty told him if he kept his mouth shut, he'd defend him and get him off, and Big Louie would make a big shot out of him as a reward. Big Louie, that's a laugh.
How long's he been dead?
4 years, since January 43.
Marty knock him off?
No, he died natural. Heart attack. Sitting right there in this chair. And that was when Marty told me about his big idea. He said that with Big Louie dead, the organization would fall to pieces. But if we went on pretending that Big Louie was alive, and Marty acted like he was just carrying out his instructions, then everything would go on just the way it did before.
So Marty told the boys that Big Louie was hot and was going to stay on ice for a while.
Yeah, but I never knew till now how true that was.
Why are you spilling all this to me?
Because that Marty Snyder is a rat. He tried to kill me, too, just because I wouldn't say anything to put Rocky Morrison in the gas chamber. Rocky's the right guy. That's why Marty hates him so, because he's a right guy.
Have another drink. You and Rocky Morrison, huh?
Yeah, me and Rocky. So what? And I'm going to kill that Marty Snyder. Kill him dead. You hear me? I'm done.
She stopped suddenly. I heard the door open behind me. I didn't turn around, but I knew who it was by the look in her eyes. She walked straight into my arms, put her left arm around my neck, and kissed me deliberately. At the same moment, I felt her hand go in my inside coat pocket, and when it came out, she pushed me out of the way and let him have it.
I heard you were looking for her. Word's all up and down the hill. Didn't think you'd find her.
I think you got a bad Snyder. Why didn't you get it off your chest? Just say yes, twice. Did you kill Fogarty and frame Rocky Morrison for it?
Yes.
And did you kill Doris tonight?
Yeah. I shot her from the truck.
Okay, sir. I'd like to be able to say I'm sorry for you, but I honestly can't. And these, gentlemen, are the true facts concerning the deaths of Doris DeSoto, about which I feel very bad, and of Marty Snyder, about which I feel nothing in particular. As you know, the next morning when Gladys Ray was put on the stand, the defense collapsed. I consider that I have discharged my civic duty as pertains to service as juror for the calendar year 1947. Thank you, and good night, Mr. District Attorney. Period. End of report.
Sam, it just gives me goose pimples all over. Imagine the Big Leo Havoc.
Big Louie Havoc, Effie.
Well, that's what I meant. In that icebox for 4 years and all that nitroglycerin around.
Yeah, it's dangerous, Effie. He could have got killed.
Well, I suppose I should be glad you got out of jury duty, Sam. But you know, the way things are, $3 a day, now that's sure money. Sam, and then your meals?
Oh, go home.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
It's true, fellows. Girls are mighty particular about the way your hair looks. They like to see it groomed the handsome wild root way, neatly and naturally. They like to see that handsome wild root look casual and well groomed. So get that handsome wild root look with Wild Root Cream Oil. It does a wonderful job of grooming your hair. Remember, there's not a drop of alcohol in Wild Root Cream Oil, and it contains soothing lanolin. So take Wild Root's close-up test, won't you? Yes, stand in front of your mirror and take a good close-up look at your hair and scalp. You may be startled by what you see. Signs of unruly hair, dryness, or loose dandruff tell you need Wild Root Cream Oil. Again and again, the choice of men who put good grooming first.
Good night, sweetheart. All my prayers are for you. Good night.
You've been listening to a presentation by American Radio Theater of a lost show from the days of old-time radio. The Adventures of Sam Spade, Jury Duty, was produced by Joy Jackson and directed by Dave Leese. Ivan Curry was Sam Spade. In the cast, you also heard Marge Lutton as Effie, Pat McNally as the clerk, Ken Leese as the prosecutor, Beth Schlansky as Doris, Michael Mokey O'Reilly as Snyder, Dan Schindler as the judge, Kim Turner as Hooper, Kay Lutz as Eloise, Melinda Maines as Ruthie, Liz Roach as the landlady, and Mary Moore Campagna as Gladys. Greg Porter is a commercial announcer. Live sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Mike Wheeler. The episode of Sam Spade was originally broadcast on May 25, 1947. Sam Spade was played by Howard Duff and Loreen Tuttle as Effie. Written for the radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Gluskin. I'm Terry Elder, your announcer, and this is American Radio Theater.
Different slice of life, we're going to visit with the Martins and the Thayers in First 100 Years, Episode 2. The newlyweds, Connie and Christopher, are home from their honeymoon to a very big surprise. All 23 rooms of it.
Do you really think a man like me can be happy married?
Yes, I do, son. If you just keep in mind one thing. The first 100 years are the hardest.
American Radio Theater presents a lost show from the days of old-time radio. Episode 2 of The First 100 Years. It's called Homecoming from the Honeymoon. Connie and Chris Thayer have been married exactly a week now, and they're on their way home from their honeymoon. They're sitting across from one another, each staring out of the train window. Would you like to know what they're thinking? Listen.
I'm married. Married? Gee, that's a funny word when you have to apply it to yourself. That's my wife sitting across from me. My wife. The most perfect woman ever created. She has everything in the world a woman could have. Beauty, intelligence, and me. I wish I could tell her how I feel. She's 107 years old and she hasn't any teeth or any hair. I'm still going to love her. I wonder what she's thinking about. She's so quiet.
It's funny how everything changes when you're married. I've taken this train ride so many times with my family before I even knew there would be a Chris in my life. I've looked at those houses and those billboards and those trees, but now they look different. They've changed overnight. Or maybe I have. Come to think of it, I haven't that.
What are you laughing about, honey?
Nothing. I was just thinking.
Oh.
Gee, it sure is a beautiful day.
It sure is. I hope we're going to be able to find an apartment. My father said he'd hunt. So did the fellas.
Remember, I told you my pop had a surprise for you?
An apartment?
No. Don't ask me any questions. It's supposed to be a surprise.
Okay, Miss Mysterious.
Mrs. Mysterious.
All right, Mrs. Mysterious. Well, my father must be getting out the car now to come down and meet us. Your father's probably doing the same.
My father's probably telling my mother to hurry up. Yeah, I can just see him. Right this minute, he's standing by the door telling my mother to hurry up.
Now, Claire, hurry up. I don't know why it is you can never be ready to go any place when I am.
Well, Walter, I simply cannot go out on the street without a dress on. No matter how it upsets you or how long you have to wait, I simply have to have time to put my dress on.
I have no objection to waiting while you put your dress on. It's waiting while you put your face on that takes the time.
Well, I have them both on now, so we can go.
The kids are going to wonder why we're not at the train.
I know, but you wanted to come over to this Victorian mansion you brought for them.
I want to be sure the house is ready for them, and the boys' parents will be at the station. Just look up at that house. 3 stories and a lookout. Isn't that something?
It sure is. Every time I look up, I expect a witch to fly down on a broomstick.
You're not yourself today, Mother.
Well, I'm so provoked with you for buying this monstrosity that...
No, I have the key right here.
How old is this place?
I've been trying to find out. It's over 100 years, I'm sure of that. It's only a bat.
Every time you open that door, a bat flies out. I don't like bats. I never have liked bats. I never will like bats.
Bats won't hurt you. All old houses have bats.
And only people who are bats buy them.
Claire!
Well, just look at this house. Look at that miserable furniture.
It takes time to furnish a house. It's a lucky thing I was able to pick up even a few sticks for them.
Sticks? That is certainly the right word. Well, I might as well go up to the second floor and open the bedroom windows. Watch for smoke signals in case I get lost.
What time is it?
Almost 10. The train will be in soon.
I can't wait to see that boy's face when he realizes this magnificent structure belongs to them.
Well, one thing, it will be nice to have them next door. I'm kind of sorry we didn't go down to the train. I can just see them now sitting on the trains. Connie's probably talking a mile a minute.
And then my father said to him, he said, well, if that's the way you feel, it's all right with me, but I'm taking my business someplace else.
Good for him. Connie, I hope we can find a small apartment. You know, something real modern. I like everything modern.
You do?
Sure. Well, you said you did too.
I did? Well, old things are kind of nice too. You know, kind of historic. Well, we'll talk about that later. Now, Chris, we're going to get off the train in a few minutes, and there's something I think we should discuss.
Okay.
We've got to adjust ourselves to our new position in the community.
Huh?
After all, we got on the train a week ago, 2 irresponsible kids, and now we're getting off a matron.
We're getting off a what?
Well, I'm getting off a matron, and you're getting off, what's the masculine equivalent to matron? What do they call a matron's husband?
Jerk?
Chris, we are now adult, mature citizens of the community. We must bear in mind our civic responsibilities, and we must try to be worthwhile.
All right. I promise to do my best to be worthwhile.
Can't you be serious?
Not when you're looking at me like that. All I can think about when you look like that is how much I'd like to kiss you.
Chris, someone will see.
What if they do? It's legal, and it's wonderful. Hello, Mrs. Thayer.
Hello, Mr. Thayer.
We're coming into the station.
Are we?
Darling.
Darling.
There they are.
Hi, Dad. Hi, Mother.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. Thayer.
Oh, Chris, my little boy. My little boy.
Hey, Mother, hold back the waterworks.
Oh, Chris, you look just the same. Just the same.
Well, how did you expect him to look? Come on now. Let's get the bags and get out of here.
Where are my folks?
Your father and mother are over at the...
Frank, I'm sure I don't know. I haven't any idea what your father's doing. Your father could be doing almost anything.
Walter, what on earth are you doing with those rags?
I'm polishing this cherry paneling.
Well, I've got to go back upstairs with these towels.
I'll go up with you.
You don't mind the trip?
Trip? You speak as though those bedrooms are in the next county.
Well, sometimes it seems as though they are.
Everyone should have houses with stairs. It's good exercise.
Yes, dear. Well, gird your loins. Here we go. Oh, we're going to have to invest in some oxygen masks.
The trouble with you is you're soft. A pioneer woman would laugh at these steps.
Oh, timber.
Now, you see, don't you feel better after a little exercise?
Okay, Hercules, lead on.
Those kids are going to develop muscles. Believe me.
They're liable to be muscle-bound.
Am I muscle-bound?
Possibly. In the head.
Claire!
Well, I'm sure I can't think of any other reason why you'd buy two helpless children a house like this.
It has oak. They're going to love this house.
I'll just put these towels down. Don't sit on the bed. It's all made fresh. If you're tired, sit on the chair.
I am not tired. I was simply going to test the mattress.
What for?
I simply wanted to see how it slept.
Oh, well, this room seems to be all right. Let's go up to the next floor and take a last look at the study.
The next floor?
Well, what's the matter? Getting enough of the stairs?
Stairs? I love stairs.
Well, then, come on. Pike's Peak or bust. Half a league onward.
Before the winter's here, you'll be running up these stairs.
I wonder what the children will do when they're up here and the phone rings downstairs.
They'll run down and answer it.
It's practically a sleeper jump. Oh, well, here we are.
You can get quite a view from this hall window. Come over and see.
Not just now. I don't want to get airsick. Oh, there's a horn. They can't be here already.
It's them, all right. Come on, Mother.
Go back down? How? Oh, throw the key out the window and have them meet us up here.
We can't do that. Come on, you'll get used to the stairs. In a day or so, they won't seem like anything.
I should live so long. All right, fasten your seatbelt and let's start down.
Why, these stairs are nothing, nothing at all. Ugh.
What's the matter? Getting tired?
No, I'm not tired. Just a little cramp in my leg.
Probably the bends.
No such thing. I knew I shouldn't have played that extra game of handball last night.
Our fans are calling for us. Lead on, Macduff.
Hey, the door's open.
That's just a bat, Mrs. Thayer.
Anyone we know?
Anybody home?
Hold everything. We're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Mother, Pop.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome.
Where have you been? Up to the second floor for the weekend?
It's so dark. I can't see a thing in here.
You're lucky.
Mother, Pop. Gee, you look wonderful. Did you miss us? I looked for you at the station.
Well, well. Pop's little girl. Son, I'm glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you, too, Pop. What are you doing over here in this old dump,
Old dump? This house has cherry paneling, oak floors, copper pipes, beamed ceilings, genuine gas jets.
And by actual account, 1,652 stairs.
Come with me, son. I'm going to show you this house.
Where did the furniture come from?
Your father picked it up at an auction.
Looks like it, too.
What's the matter with that furniture?
Don't be so thin-skinned. I just said it looks like you picked it up at an auction.
I always did think those Cupid dolls with the clocks in their stomachs were kind of cute.
Walter thought that would add a touch. The auctioneer threw it in for 50 cents.
It's a genuine relic.
And so am I at this point. So, if nobody minds, I'm going to lie down while you take a tour of the inspection.
Oh.
The couch is breaking down.
Mother!
Claire, what are you doing to that couch?
Mother, are you hurt?
I don't know. Just throw a sheet over me and leave me here until spring.
You can't trust things bought at auctions.
That was a very handsome couch. Connie, that couch is 51 years old.
I'd never know it.
I would.
Chris, my boy, I want you to take a look at this cherry paneling. Isn't that handsome?
Well, I'm afraid I don't know very much about cherry paneling, sir.
You will.
Wait until you see the basement. The pipes are all copper.
Mr. Thayer, I'm perfectly capable of conducting this tour of inspection.
Sorry, Mr. Martin. I just didn't want you to forget about the pipes.
Now, Chris, this house has 3 floors, 7 bedrooms, and a lookout. The bedrooms and the lookout are upstairs.
In the stratosphere.
They must be very fine rooms, sir.
They are, my boy. They are. On this floor, you have this magnificent 200-foot living room. There's also a kitchen, a butler's pantry, a serving porch, a dining room, a small informal parlor, a large formal parlor, a sitting room, a library, and a ballroom. And it's all yours, my wedding present to you.
That's certainly a lot of room, all right. What did you say?
He said it was ours, darling.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Well, what are we going to do with 7 bedrooms?
That's what I said, and he said he expected us to be prolific enough to fill them.
But that will take years.
It sure will.
Well, what do you say, my boy?
Pop's waiting for you to say thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. This is a day I'll never forget.
Chris is really terribly grateful, Mr. Martin. He's just overwhelmed.
I can understand that.
I'm sure that all his life, Chris has admired cherry paneling.
And from all I can see, you've got ants in your paneling.
Now, Chris, if you'd like to take a look at the upstairs, I'll wait down here for you.
Oh, no, you won't. You'll go with him. You'll show him every inch of this beautiful mansion with your own 2 feet.
And we'll all wait down here for you. You two just run along and have a good time.
Chris, maybe you'd better take your heavy coat.
My heavy coat?
Your heavy coat and an alpine walking stick.
Now see here, Claire.
Excelsior, Frank. Excelsior.
Well, come on. Come on.
How was the trip to the lake, Connie? How was the trip to the lake, Connie? Connie!
You sit there, looking at the fireplace, but not really seeing it. You start thinking about your honeymoon at the lake. You remember how, at sunset, you and Chris stood alone looking out across the lake. You felt solemn, as though, for a moment, you stood very close to something infinite. And suddenly, Chris said,
I think when you reach the end of your lifetime, it must be the moments like this that you find you remember forever.
Yes, it must.
A lot of things come in between. Laughter and tears and worries and anger, but at the end of it all, the things like this would have to stand out. The two of you beside a lake, watching the sun go down when you were young. I sound like a graybeard, don't I? Why should I be thinking of the end of our lives when this is the beginning?
Perhaps that's why. Let's come back here when we're very old. Let's come back and stand here, hand in hand the way we are now, and I'll say, thank you. Thank you for a very lovely lifetime, Mr. Thayer.
And I'll say, thank you, Mrs. Thayer. It was my pleasure. Have I told you I love you very much?
Not recently. Not for at least 5 minutes.
Other people think they've been in love. They don't even know what love is. No one ever felt like this before.
No, not like this. Never before.
There's the bell for dinner.
I'll race you down the hill. I'm starved.
Get on your mark. Get set. Go!
Honey, how was the trip to the lake?
Connie, Mr. Thayer speaking to you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Thayer. I didn't hear you. What did you say?
I said, how was the trip to the lake?
Oh, it was nice. Very nice.
Mr. Thayer and I went there on our honeymoon.
Well, don't get emotional about it.
You were so beautiful.
I was not beautiful. My word, the way you put things sometimes, Mary.
You were beautiful.
I was not beautiful. I was handsome.
You had a striped bathing suit with a little skirt on it. It came down to your knees. And I remember you were afraid it was immodest.
I certainly was the OU kid in those days.
Well, I've seen the second floor, the third floor, and the lookout.
Where's Pop?
He went to bed.
He did? What?
He went to bed.
I knew he'd fall by the wayside.
In your bed?
I don't know whose bed it was. He just said, I think I'd better test this mattress. And a minute later, he was sure testing it.
Let him rest, Mother. He's tired.
I'm not going to go up those stairs again today. For man nor beast nor your father. Oh, I have to run home for a few minutes and turn my roast on.
I'll go with you.
Why don't you run along too, Mary? I'll have a little visit with Chris.
Oh, all right.
We can go out the back way.
Now, son, I'm not going to have you railroaded into a house like this. Why, the repair bills alone will eat up a year's salary on you. And as for the upkeep...
I know, Dad, but what can I do?
You could tell old man Martin you aren't going to live in this house. By thunderation! You could tell him in no uncertain terms.
Well, I'll ask Connie what she thinks.
Don't ask Connie what she thinks, Chris. You tell her what she thinks. That's the only way to get along with women. You let them know who's boss.
Is that how you've gotten along with Mother?
Well, I didn't make certain things clear when I was your age. But by all that's holy, I'm going to see that you get started right. The first thing you know, her father's going to be running your lives, and you don't want that.
No, I don't.
So you put your foot down, and you keep it down. You let her know what's what and who's who around here right now. That old man of hers gives me a pain. I can't stand fathers that interfere in their children's lives.
I've got to really put my foot down, huh?
Firmly.
We're going to move, and we're going to move right now.
Right now.
I'm the head of this family, and I intend to be the head.
Now you're cooking with gas.
Yeah, now I'm doing the cooking. She's liable to be the one that's burned up.
Just what do you mean you're the head of this family and you intend to be the head?
I mean, I'm the head of this family.
Well, what does that make me?
What does that make you? Well, that makes you my wife.
An underling wife?
Well, it's not that you're an underling, it's just that I'm an overling.
Not over me, you're not.
I do not intend to spend the night in this house.
Do you want to break my father's heart?
If I don't, my father's going to break my head.
This is a perfectly beautiful house.
Where?
Everywhere. It has oak grates and copper paneling and cherry pipes.
And 300 rooms?
It does not. It has 23 rooms, counting the basement.
Well, that's 20 too many.
You just don't like my father.
I do like your father.
Well, you certainly have a funny way of showing it.
Come on now, honey. We'll spend the night at my house and...
No, we won't. We'll spend the night right here.
We're not going to spend the night in this house.
You can spend the night wherever you choose. I'm going to stay right here.
Then you'll stay alone.
All right, then I'll stay alone.
All right.
Chris?
Yes?
You forgot your bag.
Oh. Well, goodbye.
Goodbye.
You walk down the street. You feel like the prize heel of all time. Brutus had nothing on you. Neither did Simon Legree. Captain Bly, who made men walk the plank, was an angel compared to you. You might as well crawl into the grass and snake your way home. You remember how just the night before Connie said to you,
"We'll never have fights, will we, Chris?"
I don't know what we'd fight about.
I want our grandchildren to be able to say theirs was the perfect marriage, and all the days they lived were beautiful.
Just think. Monday I'll be back at work. We'll be two settled old married people by then.
I've been studying cookbooks. I've got menus planned for the first 6 months.
Really?
I'm going to cook you breast of guinea hen and stuffed peacock and barbecue grouse.
Stuffed peacock? Grouse? Where on earth are you going to get things like that?
From the butcher.
Oh. Well, if he doesn't have it, steak and potatoes will be just fine. Whatever you do will be just fine, Connie.
Oh, darling. I'm so happy. So happy.
Chris? Chris, what are you doing with that suitcase?
Oh. Hello, Mrs. Martin. I'm going home.
To your mother?
Well, not exactly.
Has something happened?
Well, Connie wants to stay in the house, and I don't think it's practical. And I said I wasn't going to stay, so of course I had to go.
I see. Well, this happened a little earlier than it usually happens.
You mean this happens to other people?
It happens to everyone, only usually it's the girl who goes home to mother.
Well, this happens to be her house.
I thought it belonged to both of you. Chris, you don't really want to go home, do you?
No.
Well, then why don't you come back with me and talk with Connie?
Well, I don't suppose it would do any harm to talk to her.
No harm at all. Come on, we'll go into the back door here. That's the handiest.
She's crying.
That's quite usual, too.
Oh, it's you.
Why are you crying, Connie?
Crying? I'm not crying. I just got something in my eye.
Something like a tear, maybe?
I don't really care to discuss it, Mother.
Well, that's too bad, because I'd like to discuss it. And so would Chris. Chris, for heaven's sake, put that bag down and sit down and close your mouth before someone throws a fish in it.
Oh, sure.
Now look, your lives are your own business. No one can live them for you. The most your parents can do for you is to point out certain things to you as you go along. And you can accept what we say or not, just as you see fit. But, Connie, Chris, I must say this to you. Love is the most wonderful thing that can come into your lives. It is a thing that can make every day beautiful and every year something to look back on.
It's something everyone, consciously or not, is seeking, but not everyone finds. When you have found it, you have found the best life that can offer you. And if you want to keep it, then you must cherish it. You must guard it. You mustn't hurl words and anger and unpleasant scenes and arguments against it. Because if you win an argument, you may lose a lifetime of happiness. There is great strength in love, but not the strength to withstand abuse. I tell you this now, when you are young, so that one day you will not learn it to your sorrow when you are no longer young.
I'm sorry, Chris.
I'm sorry, too.
I'll go to your house tonight.
No, we'll stay here.
No, we'll go to your house.
No, we'll stay here.
We'll go to your house.
I want to stay here.
No, you don't want to stay here.
Yes, I do want to stay.
You don't.
I do.
You do what?
Oh, Pop, he says he wants to stay here tonight.
Well, of course he does. And who wouldn't want to stay in this magnificent old house with the cherry paneling and the oak floors and the copper pipes? I'd like to stay here myself.
Well, you're not invited. You come right along to your own house, dear.
Yes, Mother. You know, I'm tired.
Even after sleeping all afternoon?
Well, I felt all right when I woke up, but by the time I walked downstairs, I was tired again.
Well, come on, Walter. Let's leave these children to get settled.
Okay. If you want anything, just open the window and holler.
We will.
You know, I think you'd better make a guidebook so people can find their way around in this house.
Well, Mrs. Thayer, we're alone at last.
So it would seem, Mr. Thayer.
Come on outside. There's a very important item to be taken care of.
What?
How in the world did you forget an important tradition like this one?
Oh, of course.
I've got to carry you over the threshold.
Chris?
Hmm?
Don't you think, as long as my father gave us this house, I should carry you over the threshold?
Nope. Here you go, ooh. Mrs. Thayer. And here we go, over the threshold and into the years.
The first 100 years, Mr. Thayer.
The first 100 years, Mrs. Thayer.
You have been listening to American Radio Theater's version of a lost old-time radio show. It was episode 2 of First 100 Years. In our cast, you heard Chuck Royalty as Christopher Thayer, Morgan Maines as Connie Thayer, Kim Turner as Walter Martin, Melinda Maines as Claire Martin, Linda Rasmussen as Mary Thayer, and Moki O'Reilly as Frank Thayer. Directed by Greg Porter and Marjorie Lutton, produced by Joy Jackson. Sound effects by Penny Swanberg and Marilyn Wilt. Music by Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. First 100 Years was originally broadcast on American Broadcasting Company on August 4, 1949. It was created and written by Gene Holloway. In the original cast were Sam Edwards, Barbara Eiler, Earl Ross, Bea Benaderet, Joe Kearns, Myra Marsh, and Barbara Whiting. I'm your announcer, Dan Schindler. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Gee, that's all I got time for today. Please have a look at our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org. We put up a new show every month. And plan to come back on December the 8th for the Old Time Radio Marathon at radioatofthepast.org. 12 hours of radio shows, noon Eastern to midnight Eastern, in the Fred Bertelsen Room. Hey, see you there.
Over to you, Louise.
Okay, Joy, thank you, and great work. Well, folks, that is just about going to wrap things up for this week's Power Hour of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. If you want some more, all you need to do is come back and join us next week when we will be packaging up an excellent and interesting, very exhilarating program for your listening enjoyment. All you have to do is join us you know where and you know when. If you have any questions, comments, complaints, or maybe even a request or two, please address them via email to MikeAmeli@earthlink.net. That is MikeAmeli@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. But just remember, be nice to one another. Otherwise, I might have to get mean old nasty librarian after you. All right, as usual, on behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.